This is a tape for Mrs. Peggy Forsyth Hazleton. So, Mrs. Forsyth, we would love to hear about the beginnings. You mentioned something about your great-grandparents who lived in New England.
My ancestors are not just when they came over, but some of my ancestors were originally United by the Loyalists.
We were talking that would mean that must have been 20 generations ago, just many generations.
Mm-hmm.
So that was very interesting, that part. And then you mentioned that the ancestors left the United States.
Yes, they settled along the Atlantic coast, some in Yarmouth County and some in St. John, New Brunswick.
Oh, just right across from each other, practically.
Well, yes, quite.
And
there's still quite a number of them with the same name living there in both places.
Oh, that's nice. Have you been back there to see them at any time?
No.
Not even since you left?
No.
Isn't that? Did you just never got around to it?
Well, I left when I was, I left Nova Scotia when I was 13. I had just completed grade 9, and I went then to New Brunswick, to Mount Allison, to complete my high school, but of course I was back during holidays each year. And then I stayed, I completed my grade 13, and took a commercial course and worked for almost a year then, but I was back to Nova Scotia, of course, in between time. But then I came west to Saskatchewan.
And that's something. Well, of course, in those days, people just didn't travel that way, you know, I guess. And as you say, you're sort of, well, you mentioned that your mother died when you were a year and a half.
Yes.
And then that your aunt, of course, would have been in Yarmouth.
Yes.
That looked after you. Were there were more than you in the family?
I was the youngest of three. My sister was 9, and my brother was, he was about 4.
Oh, they were tiny little children.
And my sister went to live with a great aunt, and my brother stayed with my dad.
For goodness sake.
And I went with my dad's sister.
Well, that must have been.
She was married, but she had had no children. She married a widower who had a family grown. He was much older than she was.
That's like your sister?
No. Oh, no.
Oh, your aunt.
My aunt.
Oh, yes, yes. Oh, so naturally she was really glad to have. Yes, it's interesting. And you mentioned that the sawmills were very interesting, all about how they were made to run and so on.
The remains of them. They were not, they had been run by the water wheel, but they weren't using the water wheels when I was a kid.
Oh, I see. That was before.
That was
before,
before
your time.
But I have seen them.
Did they weren't even working. The water wheels weren't even working anymore.
Well, they would work. The one that I saw had such a huge wheel, and it could be turned on. You see, it could be turned on or stopped. I can't remember how it was operated.
That'd be if the electricity failed, probably, because if this was electricity already, I guess.
No, it wasn't. It was, there must have been kind of a brake on the wheel that held it solid.
Oh,
and then when it was released, the wheel would turn, because I have seen the wheel turning.
Working, but actually working the sawmill.
Not working the sawmill,
but
just
turning.
Turning.
Oh, I see. But during your time, that'd be long, that's the 1900s now.
Really. Yes.
They already had electricity then for their sawmills, I suppose. Or else they ran them with gas or coal.
Gas or some kind of fuel.
Mm-hmm. I see. And that was very interesting. And you mentioned that about the tuna fishing. Well, of course, you were right on the water. And I guess you saw many ships. And
we were right on the river. We weren't right on the ocean, you know. But Yarmouth, you see, I was out of Yarmouth a few miles, a little village called Plymouth. Mm-hmm. It's right on the Tusket River. And, excuse me, south of us, about 4 miles, was the, and is still the greatest tuna fishing grounds in the world. Mm-hmm. And apparently they get the largest tuna fish there, and it's a great sport these days. They go from all over the world there. Mm. And it is Wedgeport, which originally was Tusket Wedge, it's a city now.
And you mentioned that one tuna was about 1,000 pounds that you saw.
I would imagine that would be. It was absolutely huge. That is the only one that I have ever seen. But I've seen pictures of them numerous times, and I don't know just what they do weigh, but I know they're tremendous size.
And that this particular one took 4 horses and...
Yes, and three sets of wheels, too.
Very big, long wagons.
Yes.
Yeah, that must have been something. And I suppose you tasted lots of tuna.
No. At that time, tuna was not being used very much. It was, I don't know what they used them for, fertilizer or bait or something.
Just weren't used to the taste of it.
No.
My, that's something. But they did, but you did see lobster fishing and... Did your people do lobster fishing?
No, none of my people were fishermen at all. But I visited the lobster canneries and watched them canning the lobster. And you could buy a lobster then for, a great big lobster for 50 cents.
And I guess you enjoyed eating them.
Oh, I ate a whole one night on a bet. And... we had been at a cannery, and this old guy that took a bunch of us young kids, he told us to pick out the lobster we wanted, and I chose the largest. And then the kids were teasing me. They said, oh, you wouldn't eat all that. And I said, oh, yes, I'll eat that. But you sure you have awful dreams and nightmares. It's very, very rich, you know.
Yeah, some people, I know a person that... can't eat any shellfish, right away it reacts on it.
Oh, mm-hmm.
So I guess it's the richness. So you didn't see any other kind of fishing, like as you say, your people weren't fishermen.
No, but there was lots of fish available, and very, very good salmon. And, I remember seeing seals in the river, and all week. Kids used to fish smelts. They're much like these
ulukans.
And you could just dip them out.
And the seagulls just follow them like anything.
Oh, yes. Seagulls were all over.
Because you can, in Vancouver, you can tell when the smelts are running by the seagulls flying.
Mm-hmm.
And did you ever see any of these big schooners, like, you know, the... schooners, fishing schooners, or go back and forth, or you weren't?
I've seen fairly large ones coming up the river, but not the real huge ones, but I've seen the big passenger boats come into Yarmouth. See, they Yarmouth was they had a good harbor, and it's a seaport.
But they're equal to St. John, then, in that respect.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So they would have passenger ships to go to.
Oh, yes.
Places.
Yes, they came from all over.
So you'd see all the ships coming in and going out with all the... Did they used to have bands playing and stuff like that sometimes? If there's a special occasion.
I imagine they would. I don't really know about that, but I do remember when I was a young kid that every Saturday night, the band played in Yarmouth. They played for about 2 hours, and oh, how I loved that. But you see, we were out of Yarmouth about 4 miles. And I wasn't always in there, no. You know, but I had relatives in town I used to stay with them when anything special was on, and I just loved to get in there and stay over a weekend.
Sure. They didn't have any, did you ever have any kind of royalty or anything like that arrive there on a big special route?
Not that I remember. No. Royalty at that time didn't travel. They pretty well stayed at home.
Yeah.
I remember one thing that intrigued me very much was the, now I'm not sure what church it was, but it was a brick church in Yarmouth, huge church, and it was three sides of it were completely covered with ivy and had been trained just around the big windows. Why, it was beautiful. I often wonder if it's still there.
Mm. And then you went on to say that in New Brunswick there was a lot of shipbuilding and there was a big dry dock.
Yeah.
And you were relating about this one particular ship. It was about the, you know, this, you said it was before 1914. You mentioned that they had trouble launching it.
No, this was at Wedgeport.
Oh, I see.
Yes.
Well, that's a thing.
Not New Brunswick. This is in Nova Scotia, just south of our village.
And they were building them as well.
They had been. Mm-hmm. But I think this is about the last ship that had been built around there. They were wooden vessels. And I don't ever remember of them doing any shipbuilding, but apparently there had been numerous ships built.
Well, they'd be built all over the place. Yeah. But anyhow, you mentioned that they tried to several times to launch it.
Yes. And whether the timbers weren't properly arranged or wasn't oiled or greased properly or what, I don't know, but they finally did launch it. That was a wonderful thing to see, this great big ship just gradually slide right out of the water.
Oh, and of course there'd be somebody breaking the cork.
Oh, yes.
And the champagne.
Yes, yes, oh yes, they had to. I don't know what they do.
It's hard to say.
Anointed or whatever.
There's a name for it. I can't think of it.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, you mentioned that the Annapolis Valley, that there were the loyalists made like this, your ancestors, that they settled the orchards and fishermen, I guess, in that area.
Not really my ancestors, but French had originally settled there.
Oh,
and they were doing very well. It's a very fertile country, and they had their orchards started, and whatnot when they were driven out. Some of them came drifting back, and others, they were separated. A lot of families were separated and never did get together. That's history. I mean, that's long before
you
my time,
there.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
But so then, therefore, you would have been not too far away from the Annapolis Valley.
Oh, no, not far.
That's been beautiful.
It is very, very beautiful.
Gorgeous fruit all the time. Mm-hmm. You mentioned that you went to see Prince Edward Island during that time, too, while you were still in that area.
Yes.
And you mentioned about the houses and soil or anything.
Yes, the soil is, it's reddish clay. But the fields are so beautiful, and the homes were so tidy and neat, and it's such a peaceful, quiet province. It almost like something out of a storybook.
It's called the Garden of Eden, Canada.
Yes, it's well named too.
And you mentioned the brick houses, but in all those eastern provinces,
a lot of brick houses. Up in Fort Lawrence. That is near Amherst, Nova Scotia. It's quite near the New Brunswick border. There was a beautiful brick house, a huge thing. And the key to the door was about, would be 16 inches long. All just heavy things. And the inside was finished with, you know, these great huge timbers about 12 by 12. And the doors were, and the walls too, would be very, very thick.
Well, who would have built all these houses?
Oh, the early settlers.
So it was before your time, before
my time when I was a teenager, that house was about 250 years old. The old original sundial was out in front.
Maybe the French would have built them then, would they? Probably.
No, I don't think so. I think that it had been in the family that long, you know, and for several generations.
And the sundial was in the front.
Yeah.
And I guess they had winding stairs. And
I can't just remember the stairs, but the rooms, my, it was almost like a hotel. There were so many, many rooms.
It must be real ancestral families.
Yeah. But those homes were built to live in comfort and to last for generations. And they were seldom sold because when one generation passed on, usually there would be one of the younger ones that would take over.
Isn't that interesting? Really interesting. I suppose it'd still be there.
I imagine. I can't ever imagine that
and disappearing.
Disappearing, a huge big fireplace is in it.
And then you mentioned that after you finished your commercial and all that, and incidentally we had a lot of fun talking about what a commercial person was and about shorthand and bookkeeping. What a lesson that was, what a bookkeeper was. You know,
yeah.
I ask questions about all kinds of funny things about it, mm-hmm. to get the answers from mm-hmm. them, and a lot of children didn't understand what a bookkeeper was. You know,
right.
You know, they could understand a librarian because they really have mm-hmm. been a bookkeeper. And then we finally concluded that a bookkeeper has a lot to do with the wages of people that are getting paid, that they mm-hmm. have to do with the money coming mm-hmm. in or going out, you see.
Of course, we didn't have the tax problems to contend with then mm-hmm. when I was working.
No. And then you mentioned you finally wanted to really go to Saskatchewan to see your sister.
Yeah. Well, she kept urging me to come as she pictured that it was really a second Garden of Eden, but I was very disappointed. And I came out in the early part of August, and the wheat fields were very golden. Was a wonderful crop that year, and my brother-in-law drove me around to different places. We went to Landis, and we went past this great big a community farm. It wasn't a community, it was a family farm, several brothers. And the car was getting warm, and he said, oh, I'll have to stop at this next place and get some water. So he was in getting water, and I asked my sister who lived there and whose farm that was, because it was such a huge thing, and I wasn't accustomed to these great big farms, you know, because there are smaller farms in the east. And she said, oh, that's the Harts place. I said, oh, what Harts is that? Oh, she said, there's Fred and there's Warren. I said, Warren? And she said, yes, why? And I said, well, are any of the girls here? Well, she said, there's a couple of them. They teach school. I said, is Hazel here? Yes. So I went in, and Hazel was in there, and they were all sitting around this cookhouse having their meal. And Hazel and Edith both, and I had gone to, they were going to university. At Mount Allison, you see, and I knew them.
Yeah.
In New Brunswick.
Oh, for goodness sake.
And the whole family had come out.
Oh, just come out to stay?
Yes, they were had settled out there.
Now, what year would that be that you came to Saskatchewan?
I came in 51.
1951.
Yeah.
Isn't that interesting? And then, of course, you say that the name, you went to work for a year. And then you married and settled down at Bigger.
No, I married in Saskatchewan.
That's what I mean, in Bigger.
Oh, yeah, in Bigger, sure.
And tell us that part about the sign that they have beside Vigor.
For several years we heard about this sign, but then in one of the bigger papers it mentioned that there was no such sign, that someone had just started this story, but they thought it was about time they had the sign. So now they have at the highway just entering town a great big sign saying New York is big, but this is bigger.
Children do that in their books.
Yeah. Yeah. I have a card with it, or a picture of it somewhere, but as I say, my pictures aren't available right now.
You mentioned many things about your mother-in-law, that she was just a jewel to you when you got
married. Oh, she was wonderful. I think she's one in a million. All my problems I took to her, and believe me, coming from the environment that I had and going on you might say a poor farm. It wasn't exactly a poor farm, but it was...
The way of life would be so different.
It was. It really was. And I thought the people were so crude, you know. It seemed to me, when I met the people, they were so inquisitive and they were so crude, but I found out after that they just had hearts of gold, the whole works of them. It was a wonderful community. I remember one year our garden had been frosted, and I had quite a few children at that time, and we were just almost ready to have lunch, and this chap pulled in, backed up to the back door where we had quite a good sized open porch where you went in the back door, and he had nearly a truckload of vegetables, everything, pumpkins, squash, tomatoes, cucumbers, just everything you could imagine. And he just unloaded them. He said, we knew you lost your garden. We have more than we need.
Oh.
Another year, we had, under our house, we had it was a full-size basement, but they had dug out under the kitchen and pantry almost like a root cellar with just the dirt walls. And there was a chute there to put the potatoes and vegetables and things down so they didn't have to be carried. And we were in the kitchen and we heard this awful roar under there. Oh my goodness, what's going on? And listen, it was just a rumble, almost like a thunder, you know, but it was continuous. Looked out the window and here was one of our bachelor neighbor that lived just north of us, and he had a team of horses and a dump cart, and this is how he hauled his potatoes, but we had a lot of potatoes, he didn't need them all. So here he was with his cart dumped up and he was running these potatoes down the chute into our cellar.
Isn't that just wonderful?
But that is the way the people were, the whole district. I don't know if all of the prairie districts were like that or not, but our district certainly was.
Isn't that wonderful? Well, I think a lot of the prairies have a name for that.
Yes.
I think generally speaking. You mentioned about the story about the chicken that you were...
Oh, dear. The first chicken that I ever was expected to kill and pluck, and to this day I've never killed a chicken. I can't even kill a mouse. I'll look at it, or if it's caught by the tail, I'll lay it out of the trap because I just can't. But this chicken was hen was eating eggs, and my husband told me to chop its head off and get it ready, cook it for supper. So after he got out in the fields working, and I looked at that chicken and, oh dear. I thought, well, I guess I better do something. So I picked up the chicken and I'm carrying it with the hind legs. It's a wonder it didn't die on the way over, and I tried over to Mother's place. And she had a great laugh over that. She saw me coming with the chicken. She knew what was up. So she killed and dressed the chicken for me.
Isn't that wonderful? And she told you all about how to cook it and stuff.
Well, I pretty well knew that.
Yes,
one thing I had done at home when I was a kid, you know. I liked cooking, and although we had lots of help, I didn't have to do it. I was never asked to do any work, but I did love cooking, and I had learned to get meals because my aunt told me if I wanted to learn to cook, the first thing was to get a full-fledged meal. She said that you just don't make cakes or you just don't make cookies. She said, you make learn the meal first.
My mother said that she used to work out when they came to Canada.
Yeah.
And she was asked to kill a chicken. And she said she thought she would die the first time that she had to clean one. Because, you know, the nauseating smell comes.
Oh,
and
it's
she thought
terrible.
That she would die, but she could have.
Well, I can dress chickens.
Oh, I'm sure.
Now, pluck them and dress them, but I couldn't kill one.
No. Well, it is quite an experience. It was many years that I hadn't chopped the head off, you know. And Carol was little, and I was in Alberta, and we were, you know, I had to chop this chicken's head off. And so, of course, there was all these little kids with me, too, you know, and I wasn't about to have them watch anything. And, you know, I couldn't eat that chicken afterwards. I chopped it so they wouldn't see me,
mm-hmm.
but I couldn't eat it. It just really upset me, and I thought, that's it. I wouldn't chop another one.
When we were in Saskatchewan, we raised turkeys, and we had chosen this one turkey was to be our Christmas dinner. Sherman would be, 13, I guess, then 12, 13, somewhere around there, and he was going to kill a turkey. And he got on the block and held it, and he got the axe in his hand, or the hatchet, and finally calling Mom. And I stuck my head out the door. I didn't want to see him killed. He says, I can't do it. I just haven't got what it takes. So the turkey was put back in the chicken pen with the chickens. And I had some groceries brought out from Houston. This is when we were on the farm. And turkeys brought out from, or groceries brought out from Houston. And the lad that brought them out, I thought, now there, I'll get the turkey killed. So I said, will you do something for me? Well, yeah, it isn't too hard or doesn't take too long. I said, I've got a turkey that none of us can kill when you chop its head off. Oh, sure. And then I can remember when he came out with the turkey, I was running for the house. I didn't want to be around there. But I said, don't hurt it, though, will you?
Yeah, it's...
And that not to amend it, you know.
No. That's right. You also mentioned the story about the horse hitching. This is, we were talking about the chicken.
Mm-hmm.
And you mentioned about the horse hitching that your husband asked you, he thought he was going to pull a fast one on you.
Yes, this is when I was really first married. And he had a beautiful driving mare. And at that time we didn't have a car. But he asked me to put the harness on the horse. I wasn't going to drive a horse or go anywhere. I was just going to put the harness on. But he thought I couldn't do it, and I did, and he was really surprised.
You talked about the blizzards in Saskatchewan, but I guess there's some really terrible blizzards.
Terrible. Different... people lost their lives in blizzards. One young man was at a neighbor's, and he was only about a mile from home, or half a mile maybe. I don't think it was a mile. And they wanted him to stay, and he said no, he'd make it home. He got as far as the fence behind their buildings, and he was exhausted.
Just died. Oh. Would it be that cold or just windy?
It was very cold, but it was the wind and there's fine snow, and it just seemed to plug your lungs.
Take all the heat out of you.
Yes.
Oh, dear.
He was just a lad about 19.
Oh.
So.
And then you mentioned that all about the grasshoppers.
Oh, yeah, they were real dillies.
You actually saw them on the field.
Oh, yes, and the field would be
thick.
Thick with hoppers, or if they had moved on, it was just as if there had never been a bit of grain or anything
like
growing there.
Just like it had been just plowed or
yes.
something.
Yes.
Yeah. Disked or something. Oh, dear. And you say these did last about 3 years.
As I remember, they were bad, really, really bad for about 3 years, but then they had grasshoppers longer than that, but not that terribly bad. But they just destroyed the crops completely. There was nothing left.
And of course, let's see, wait a minute. We have here that you came to Saskatchewan in 1930, why you meant? No.
I came to Saskatchewan.
In 1950?
No, I came to BC in 1951.
That's what I thought. But to Saskatchewan, when you came there, that would be way above in the 1930s or so.
Yeah.
1930s, yes. Because I thought it just didn't seem to make match. And then you mentioned about the cars, things to do with grasshoppers, about cars and...
Yes, plugging the radiator so that they couldn't drive and the cars would heat.
So they just have to plug them all up?
Yes, and then they got shields, sort of wire shields.
It'd have to be wire so the air would go through.
Yes, to protect the radiator.
And you mentioned the chickens, one farmer's chickens were dying out, and you couldn't figure out why.
Yes, chickens and turkeys both. They were the young chickens.
Oh.
I don't know whether the old stock died out or not, but they had the vet come to examine them, and the crops were just punctured with grasshoppers.
So I guess being young and being small crops, mm-hmm. they just... Because it would be just like the second stomach, you see.
Yes.
You know? And then you mentioned about your Jim the Crow. You have to tell all kinds of things about your Jim the Crow.
Yeah. Well, we had a couple of crows, but this one, the first one we had, got tired and he took off in the fall. So we got another one. We had him a couple of years. And he was just giggled me several times, thinking the children were not far away and finding out that he was just imitating their different voices, and it was really tremendous. It's almost unbelievable.
Really unbelievable, especially imitating children, as you
say. And he imitated the turkeys too. He was so curious, and he stole things from anything shiny he would steal and hide it. And he had one hiding place, which we never did find, but this is a fault of the crows, pet crows. They love shiny things, and they will. If you find their hiding place, you'll find everything imaginable there. But the poor beggar got his head chopped off or his neck broken. I don't think it chopped his head right off in the pump jack.
With the pump jack, but they tried to, we couldn't quite understand what it was.
Well, a pump jack is, can I really describe it, but there's two shafts and a piece across the top, and it's a gear sort of thing that fit on a deal that it goes up and down.
With a gas
up
engine.
Up and down with a gas engine.
Oh, yeah.
It's just the same as taking a pump handle and pumping up and down, but this is run by the motor.
Oh, yeah.
And he was so curious, he stuck his head in there and coming down, it just broke his neck.
Yeah. And let's see. Wait, did anyone ever try to teach him to talk?
No, but I knew there was a family of Malcolms that had a crow for ever so many years. And they lived just out of Bigger, just a mile or two out of Bigger. And their crow talked like everything, just like a parrot. But I think ours would have eventually.
Oh, I see. It was just young yet.
Yes.
Did you have to clip his feathers or anything to keep him?
At first we clipped the one wing, but the kid's gone when he was quite young, you know.
So then he got to be...
And if you want, they say the male crows will talk, the females won't.
Oh.
I would imagine it might be the other way around, but apparently not. And you pick the biggest and blackest crow in the nest because they're the males.
Hmm. That's interesting. There was talk about the Dirty 30s, remember, Mrs. Egan?
Yeah.
And something about, I think you were you 20 miles? No, you weren't. Were you 20 miles from Bigger?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yes. And you mentioned something about that there were relief trains that used to come,
mm-hmm.
you know, with
And they had, oh,
the grain.
Some of them had grain for seed, you know, and at that time the government would only allow people to keep so many cattle, and they could get feed enough for those cattle.
Mm-hmm.
But if you had your own feed and didn't have to worry, you could keep all you wanted. We never had to sell any cattle. Oh, there's something I must tell you, too. Cattle were dirt cheap then. Just, you couldn't give them away, really. And they were, if you had to get rid of them, the government would, or they would send trains in and you'd ship them out. And one man had shipped out, I don't know how many, and he got a bill afterwards. Rather than getting anything out of his cattle, he got a bill for part of the freight for hauling them out. That's how low they were. Our land was not too heavy, and we grew a lot of rye. And one year, rye was selling for 9 cents a bushel. Another year we burned barley in our cook stove because you could not sell the grain and buy coal. Mm-hmm. And of course we had no wood. But we kept our rye. Most all the homes, the places, the farms were mortgaged. And it seemed that we had a dirty government, and they favored the mortgage companies. And as soon as the grain was harvested, you had to pay their share. And this was the year that rye was 9 cents a bushel. Well, we could have sold every bit we had to make our payment on the farm. But I had some money available, so instead of giving them their share of grain, we gave them the money. And we sold our rye for 50 cents a bushel the next spring.
Oh my, that was wise, wasn't it? Oh, that was terrific. Yes, that was very, very hard. Yes, in Alberta, you see, it was the other way around. The farmers weren't kicked out because they couldn't make their payments. They went to court. You probably knew about that. My brother, this is after my father died, 1930, in the 30s. They would go to take, they would go, they'd have a court and assess the whole business, and all the interest would be chopped off, and people could start sort of all over again. Because I know there was when our farm, you know, when he started, there was a $5,000 debt, well, in those days, and you may just well say it was about $50,000
today.
And, you know, it seemed like he wasn't about to, and the interest was just, mm-hmm. you know, growing, and you could hardly make, as I said, we used to sell oats at 10 cents a bushel to give us to school. But then they would do that, and the farmers then could have a new lease on life and start all over again. And of course, he's worth something these days.
We didn't have that privilege.
No,
help in Saskatchewan, and so many people lost their farms. And what made the farmers very, very provoked was the fact that there were so many immigrants coming in from Europe,
mm-hmm.
and they were given, they demanded and got privileges that the pioneers never had.
Mm-hmm.
And they had so many bushels to keep for seed, they had so much out of their crop to keep their family during the winter, they had so much for feed, before they had to pay a cent. And this really provoked
That's not fair.
No, it isn't.
No.
But so many people lost their farms.
Oh, very sad. And of course, you had the wind, like during the, you had the droughts, and you had the mm-hmm. winds, and you had the terrible darkened air with the wind.
Dust storms. We had, my husband and I got some land, 3/4 of it, and broke it up. It was raw prairie land, but it was very, very heavy land. This was down near Rosetown. And he broke it, and he seeded it 3 different years. and we never harvested a bushel off it, so then he let it go. One year there was the most beautiful crop you ever saw to look at, and oh, it must have been at least 5 feet high, yes, maybe higher. They cut it and stooped it, and they were using threshing machines then. That was shortly before the combines. And when they came to thrash it, it was so full of rust that it wouldn't pay for the twine that was used to bind it. Oh. So it was burned.
I guess.
They had to burn it. That was really heartbreaking.
Of course. Of course it would be. Yes. So then, anyway, after all those ups and downs, you decided in 1951, that's what it was. In August 1951, that's when you came to Houston.
Yeah.
And it was interesting.
Or to Pearl.
Or Pearl.
Yeah.
Pearl. And you mentioned that, the five children came with you, and that you traveled by passenger train. And this part is very interesting, that you had a car of settler's effect and a car of
cattle.
That was very interesting. That was sort of given, sort of free of charge.
Oh, not free of charge, no. It was a special rate we got, a very special rate. Well, I think it cost us $800
for our
tickets
move.
And the whole move.
No, that was enough, I guess, really.
But we didn't buy property. Stewart had some property, and we moved on to his property.
Well, that was then, of course, it was a steam train, and I guess
yes,
your children would be the girls mostly, and all that would be all interested in the train ride and the whole bit, I suppose.
Oh, well, they'd all had train rides before. We came out in 1948 for the winter.
Oh, I see.
The three girls.
Yes.
Marie and Anna and Elaine.
Mm-hmm.
Elaine was about 2 years old.
And of course you thought British Columbia was the best place in the world.
Well, the boys were out here and they kept urging me to come, and I wasn't happy back there, so we came.
Sure. And you mentioned that you had quite a scepter with the school board.
Oh, we certainly did. We verbally battled back and forth for ages before we could get transportation for the children, but we finally did.
And then you said even then the transportation was just a truck with the canvas.
No. This is when we went. Some of the women were going into Burns Lake, and all the transportation available to get in that particular night was a truck. With a big heavy truck with a canvas over the back.
To the meeting. Oh,
so we piled in and away we went.
Oh, I see. So when they finally provided transportation, was a bus then?
It was a small bus, but it was privately owned. One of the neighbors bought one after he got the sanction from the school board, and then he would get paid accordingly for his own bus. But it was just a...
So then, the children then attended Houston School.
Later on, for high school.
I see. So it was Pearl first.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. And
at Pearl, and then Topley.
Oh yeah.
And then later on.
What do you mean? You moved to these different places?
No.
Oh no, just where the schools were.
Well, they moved the school to Topley.
Oh, I see.
So the children went there, and then I wasn't satisfied with the. Transportation then. The bus driver was always seemed to be having problems and very late getting home, and that we lived half or three quarters of a mile up from the highway, and it wasn't
the children have to walk.
Walk up.
Can I have a cookie?
It's okay.
Then I moved into a little place in Houston for the three girls.
Oh, I see.
Finished there.
From the farm. Mm-hmm. Well, then you were farming there with the boys then for a while.
Well,
just for a short time.
Yeah.
No. Anyway.
Stuart wasn't living there then. We just lived there, but he came and put up the hay. And
So you didn't really, you know, really sort of farm. It was just a place to more or less
place to live. We had to feed the cattle and all that. The moose used to come out meet with the cattle, and the deer would come out on the fields.
And of course, you have a huge garden.
Yes, we had a garden every year. It wasn't very huge, but we had a garden.
You mentioned that some of the cattle that you had, would this be cattle for all the way from Saskatchewan that was Angus that you brought? And still is in Hazleton to this day.
Yeah, Stuart has the descendants of those cattle.
Yes, oh yes. And your girls, you said something about, oh I see, it's grade 8 to high school that they took in town.
Yes.
So of course they'd have all the graduations and all that in those places.
Well, unfortunately they didn't graduate.
Mm-hmm. But whatever.
Yeah.
You know. So then you mentioned, I think I asked you what attracted you to Hazleton, and you mentioned something about it. Was, I guess your family was here.
My family, mainly, and I lived here for a while before I actually settled here permanently, and I like the climate, I like the scenery, and it's very nice being near my family.
Yes, of course. Well, it really is a little gentler climate.
Oh, yes, much. Houston has so much wind, and it's more frosty.
And cold.
And cold.
That's right. But the story that you told about Dr. Haley, which of course is your maiden name, I think that was kind of interesting. I think maybe that would be our sort of the final touches.
Well, when we were in Prince George, Elaine had taken our children up to the fifth floor, and I was with my daughter Shirley. She was looking at the bulletin board and see what doctors were on which floors and so on. And she called me. She said, Mother, is this any relation of yours? Doctor. I forget his initials. Haley. And I said, oh, I don't think so. I wouldn't imagine, but I said, it is an uncommon name. I've never encountered the name since I left the East. She said, well, come on, we're going to find out. And I said, oh, no, I'm not going to talk. Yeah, she said, we're going. Come on. So finally up we went on the second or third, whatever it was, floor. And I talked to the girl at the office and felt very embarrassed about doing it, but she was very, very nice, and she said, well, just sit down. He's not too busy. I'll talk to him as soon as that patient comes out. So she came back and she said, yes, you're to wait. He wants to talk to you. So it wasn't very long before he came out, and we compared notes and whatnot, and he said, well, there's no doubt what we're related. And he told me that his father was compiling a family history, and I said, well, I'd certainly like to read it.
Yeah.
My aunt had had a family history. Now, I'm not sure if it was her father's side or her mother's side, but
it is interesting.
I never did get to see it. I was just a child when she had that done, and I never did get a copy. I would certainly like to have had one, and I don't know whatever happened.
Yes, they're great. Tell me, you must know how many grandchildren and great-grandchildren you have.
Yeah, I have 52 grandchildren, and I have 11 great-grandchildren.
Isn't that a big family tree? And of course, there are still 13 living of the 14.
Yeah.
My goodness. I think that's tremendous. So that's really great, I think. I think we just about round around.